and welcome to the LDCU Talking Online Learning Podcast. My name is Jim Judges. In this episode, I firstly speak to German language tutor Rosa Nazzaro from the School of Modern Languages. Rosa talks to me about the use of individual and collaborative wikis to support learning using the Moodle Wiki tool, and then reflects on some of the wider experiences, challenges, and opportunities of moving to online learning this year. Secondly, I speak to e-learning multimedia developer Kim Watts from WMG, and Kim tells us about a project that involved the design and production of a digital interactive magazine to support learning in an IATL module. Kim also tells us about other aspects of her role within the technology enhanced learning team. I'm here with Rosa Nazzaro from the School of Modern Languages. However, rather than me introduce you, perhaps you could introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your role and work at Warwick, Rosa.
Yes, I'm a German tutor at the Language Center, and I have been teaching beginners and post-beginners courses since 2017.
Excellent. And you've been involved in a project. Perhaps could you tell us what that project was?
Yes, my project for the PGATL was investigated the wiki-based activities and the impact of wiki-based activities on knowledge construction and collaboration as a complement to the face-to-face meetings in a German beginner course.
Yeah. So perhaps we could unpack that a little bit then, and you could tell us, first of all, what technology were you using? Were you using the wiki in Moodle, or were you using some other wiki? And then how did it work? Did all students work on one wiki, or how did you divide up? So could you tell us a bit more about how it worked and what the students did?
So I decided to use a wiki embedded on Moodle because my students were already familiar with the platform. And so wiki is not difficult to use, and also because I have at the Language Center, the courses are attended by undergraduates, postgraduates, people from public, people from staff. So I have a diverse background, cultural background, work background. So you have to consider carefully needs, motivations. And so I thought that wiki could be a user-friendly technology for all these students, also because I have older students who are not very accustomed to technology. So it was, I thought, a good tool to start to enhance collaboration. Yeah.
And could I ask you, therefore, as an example of what sort of thing would the student do in the wiki, or what did you set up? Was it completely blank when it started, or did you build a framework? So just try and describe it to us a little bit more, if you can.
Yes, we carried out four wiki activities. So the first wiki, the first activity was a personal wiki activity. So at this stage, the students, before engaging in collaborative activities, they became familiar with the tool and started with this personal wiki after a month. And then they continued until the end of the course. It was a sort of personal framework in which they could integrate the language content introduced in the lesson. And so they had the opportunity to integrate this content in their personal wiki page and to modify it over time. And then, yes, we started with collaborative activities. At the beginning, it was not so easy because few students got involved. But I can say that I saw this participation growing over time. And in the last activity, students were more keen on collaboration. And I think that their communication was more open. Also because I think that it was easier for me also, we had a sort of blended learning because I had the face-to-face meetings and then this asynchronous environment. And I could, in a way, leverage these face-to-face meetings to speed up this process of interactions online. So it was quite, it was easier than, for example, this year.
Well, that's interesting. Yes, I'll be interested to compare that. So when you're talking about face-to-face, that was pre-pandemic, pre-lockdown then, presumably. And we'll compare that experience. Also, for anybody listening who doesn't know, that's interesting that you mentioned running it in individual mode, because that does mean that the student then has a private document which only you and they can see. And what sort of thing would they put in their individual wiki? Was it just a record of their work, or did they have tasks to do? And then what sort of work were they doing in a group?
Okay, yes. So in the personal wiki page, they had to talk about They were supposed to talk about themselves. So the aim was to use the language covered in class in a personal way and in a different context. Mm-hmm. It was a way to give them a sort of cognitive ownership of the language, so they could refer language to themselves. Yes. In this personal wiki page. So each topic covered in class was referred to themselves in the wiki page. Mm. And at the end of the course, they had a quite long document. Yep. With their story in the target language.
Yes.
And thanks to Wiki, they were able to modify the document each week, so they could, in a way, see how the learning progressed and how the learning was shaped. And yes, it was a way to see their learning represented. And it was quite useful, I think, for them.
Yeah. So would they also post pictures? Would they also make the and edit the page? Was it just text? What would the page
look
like?
Well, no. They were able also to post images and it was a sort of story. So they were able to share. Yeah. In this case, just with me, their tastes, feelings, interests, hobbies. Yeah. Or to talk about their families or breakfast habits, for example, everything, because it was a beginner level, so a very low level. And so they were not able to talk about difficult.
Nothing too advanced. And what about when they got into the group task? How did that differ then? What would they do there? Were they building just one page, or were they building a few pages? What were they doing in the group task?
So the second activity was a collaborative activity, and I created four groups. And they started from, they used a photo as a prompt to start a conversation. So students could anytime break in and change the direction of the conversation. And it was quite interesting, because each week, the conversation. So it was a sort of interview. They just had a photo with, in this case, it was, for example, a photo of a man with a dog. So they started asking, what's your name? Where are you from? And then, but the conversation, the direction changed according to the topics covered in class. Yes. And so it was quite nice to see that. And they were quite creative.
Yes.
Quite creative with that.
And what would you say? Sorry if I'm interrupting. Feel free to carry on. But what would you say for anybody considering using the wiki, maybe for languages, but maybe for other subjects? How did you find the technology? Because sometimes the Moodle tools can be a little bit confusing. They sometimes don't always do what you want. So how did you find the tool itself as a teacher and somebody who had to manage it?
Well, I think that it is quite easy for the students to use. And I think it is important to give a sort of induction at the beginning of the course, because not all the students are familiar with technology or wiki in this case. So it is important just to show them. Well, the students, in their feedback, they wrote that the technology is quite clunky. And also because they do not receive notification. And sometimes when students post, they do not receive a notification and can be frustrating and time consuming to, to check each time and see if someone has posted or not. So this is alike forums or blogs when you can receive a notification. With Wiki, it is not possible. And so it is not. Sometimes very
No, well, that's worth knowing, actually. And I suppose there are pros and cons of the different tools. And you maybe hinted at it, but do you think from a language learning point of view that there's anything special about the Wiki? Do you think if people engage with it, that it will actually help them with their language? Is there anything that's at its heart that aligns with your pedagogy, do you think?
Well, I think that Wiki is quite useful to learn a language, and particularly in lower language courses, because it is difficult at the beginning to make students speak. So the only communication, effective communication, can happen through the writing. So people can interact and simulate in a way a real communication by the means of writing, and it is quite Wiki, it is useful because anyone from anywhere can post, modify, can revert also the stored versions, and it is quite useful. So they can also compare different versions, and they can see over time how their learning grow.
And what about, and how do you interact with the Wiki? Because students might be adding some good content, but they might make mistakes, there may be problems with spelling or grammar. Would you correct that, or would you worry about that? So how would you interact with that?
Well, there was quite an open communication between us. So in the personal Wiki page, I corrected and just underlined the mistakes. In the collaborative, I didn't highlight the corrections. So I just corrected, and they could see they could compare. Just because I didn't want to, it could be embarrassing from some students to see their mistakes corrected. So it was just a way. But anyway, I just wanted to add something that some students did not get involved actively, there was also some positive lurking, because even students who did not participate, this open environment allowed them to read other posts, and in a way, this enhanced their reading skills and vocabulary.
This sounds good and well worth anybody considering as a tool. I wonder if we could broaden the discussion a little and think about, you mentioned yourself about the face-to-face that you launched, the face-to-face sessions that where you launched this initially, but then you've had to work like the rest of us at a distance for much of the year. So could you say something about maybe those differences, and how has it been challenging for you to move from the classroom to online teaching, or are there any problems but also any benefits?
Well, I think that the technology allows, so I think that with Moodle, I was able to offer good ways to practice the language even online, and it was quite important. For example, also this year, I use a lot blogs, forums, and Wiki as well this year, and also glossaries. So there are many ways to make students collaborate online.
Yes,
you're right, it is more difficult, because if you have a face-to-face meeting, you can leverage this meetings and you can create a sort of dialogue between these two environments. For example, it was quite interesting for me during my project to in a way to cull students' examples from the wiki and to reuse them in class.
Yes.
And so it was real language from authentic people, and it was more engaging for them.
Yes.
In a way. And yes. So, but I can see that maybe online it is maybe more difficult to create these team feelings.
Yes.
So it takes more time.
Yes.
Also because the online environment, it is, I think, before reflective and then collaborative. So it takes more time. But at the end, with an extended period of time, you can achieve also cooperation.
What about, as you mentioned earlier, I think I could imagine this myself, that I might be nervous about speaking in class. I'm worried about making a fool of myself when I'm learning a language. Did you notice any difference between students in class and their confidence to contribute versus perhaps students on a Teams meeting and their willingness to... Were they still embarrassed about speaking? Were they still shy, or would they use their microphone any more than they might speak in class? Was there any difference?
Well, no. I think that maybe online, in a way, they feel safer. Maybe it is different. Maybe they perceive the online environment as a less threatening compared to the face-to-face meetings for more reticent students or for shy students. The online environment can be maybe less threatening, yes.
So how do you view the future? What do you expect to be doing and hope to be doing?
Well, I think that for me as a foreign language teacher, the best formula is a blended learning. So face-to-face meetings, yes, maybe more engaging for a language course, but it is important also to complement and extend these face-to-face meetings with an asynchronous environment. So I would like to blend more the face-to-face environment with an asynchronous environment. And I would like to refine these wiki activities and, yes, to explore other tools to make students interact more, because interaction is fundamental for me in a foreign language learning.
Yes. It sounds like you're already making some good use of Moodle tools. You mentioned the forum and the glossary and the wiki, of course. So is this all self-taught? Have you been given any help, or is it just through your own exploration of Moodle? How have you found
it? Yes, I was quite curious about Moodle, and I was also trying to find new ways to enhance intrinsic motivation, to explore new ways of learning the language. But I think that the PGATEL prompted me also to explore more technology.
Excellent.
And to reuse it in class.
Good. Well, that's good. That's good to hear. And perhaps as somebody, you might not appreciate it, but as somebody who's using technology so well and starting to be a bit more adventurous, do you have any tips on your use of the wiki or maybe Moodle in general for somebody who is just starting out? Do you have any advice?
Well, for wiki, I think it is quite important. I found very fascinating at the beginning for my project to in a way to explore the presence, the teaching presence, the social presence, and the cognitive presence in wiki. So it is very important in an online environment to pay attention to what happens. And to try to in order to exploit this tool, to be more confident also with pedagogic, because otherwise sometimes it is not easy to design the learning environment, and so to be more aware of your teaching presence, what is your role in this new environment, and how can you foster a cognitive presence in the sense that how can you show students a way to go towards metacognitive strategies. And the social presence is also important online, because the environment is a faceless environment, and if you are able to make people feel like real people online, it is the best way to achieve a cognitive presence as well.
No, this is good, and I think this chimes with other things I've seen and read and heard, and this idea that it's difficult in the classroom. We can be more human and we can be more empathetic, but if we can bring the human components and that empathy into what we do online, then this will help to develop the social component. So what's the secret to that then? Is it about making sure you're demonstrating your interest, making sure you're looking at it on a regular basis, making sure you're raising the profile and feeding back? Is that how we do it?
Yes, I think that the important thing, and that students see that you are there.
Yes.
And so your presence is very important, not only in timely feedback, scaffolding, not only in that, but also if you are able to share some opinions and feelings. So to go beyond the teaching presence.
Yes.
And so if you in a way can blur these boundaries between teaching presence and social presence, it is very useful for the students. And it is also a way to learn the language in a different way. As you say, it is important to humanize this environment and to minimize the differences between face-to-face and the online.
Yes, this is interesting, because I think one of the things that has happened is perhaps that the students have seen that the staff are human beings after all, and that we have a life, and that we also have a kitchen and perhaps pets and maybe family members. So I think that's one thing that maybe teams and tools have done, is that we've maybe shown that maybe we're more similar than perhaps we realized. Yeah, that's good. Thank you for that. Rosa, this is all fascinating, and it's really interesting to hear about your use of wikis, and particularly as I've managed to use wikis in the past with students, and I'm a big fan and believer in their capacity to help. I also have another idea as well, that we often in education, particularly at university, say, oh, well, never use Wikipedia and don't rely on it as a source. But if nothing else, that these students have developed a better understanding of how wikis work and what they are, even if perhaps don't use them. Can I thank you for your time and wish you well with this term and indeed your teaching next year. Thanks, Rosa.
Thank you very much, Jim.
And next, I caught up with Kim Watts from WMG.
So my role is e-learning multimedia developer at WMG. And my main role is to support learning and teaching by providing multimedia solutions to enhance and improve content delivery.
OK, thanks for that. And what sorts of modules and programmes do you support? Do you work right across WMG, or do you focus on particular paths?
Yeah, no, right across WMG.
And what about typical software that you use? We're going to get into the meat and nitty gritty of your recent project, actually. But just before we talk about that, what are your top five or so software that you use to support your work? What do you use?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of the Adobe Creative Cloud. So I'm just moving into things like After Effects, which allows us to add that extra level of detail onto animations or enhancing videos. I do a lot of video filming, so green screen filming and production. So I use Premiere and Photoshop a lot. I also use an application called Vyond, which is an online animation service. Doing quite a lot with Miro at the moment.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's interesting. Miro's picking up and proving quite popular. Out of interest, what sort of thing are you looking at, or what do you do with Miro? How might you use it?
So I've done quite a few things. So recently I run one session on a module, Serious Tabletop Game Design, and the session is all about design and production. So I used Miro to actually asked the students to engage in some activities. So I got them to design a board game within Miro. They designed a set of instructions. They worked over teams. So they had their teams meeting and they worked collaboratively in Miro. And it worked really well.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear. Yeah, and Miro is quite interesting how you can see people working and moving and interacting. So it has that benefit as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's really nice is the students don't have to set up an account. So as long as you share an open link for them to edit, they appear anonymous, but actually they can still, they know that each of us are on there and working together. So
yeah, that's good to hear. One of the reasons that I wanted to talk to you, I'll ask you about a series of different aspects of digital and online learning. But one of the reasons I want to talk to you was about your experience with the PGA TEL and your project. So perhaps you could just tell me, as an introduction, for anybody listening who doesn't know about the PGA TEL, what stage are you at with that and how long does it take? What is it, as far as you know?
Yes, so the PGA TEL, the Postgraduate Award in Technology Enhanced Learning, takes about 8 months. Now, it was slightly longer due to the pandemic and the situation that we had. That was led by Jess Humphreys, and it was fantastic. It kind of, because I was new to education when I started, it gave me an insight and it gave me that opportunity to learn about education and how people learn. And as it happened, a project that I was thinking about doing kind of came along at the right time. So I used that as a project.
Yeah. And do you want to tell us a bit more about the detail of that project then? So what was it? What was it trying to achieve and what stage are you at with it?
Yeah, so I developed an interactive dynamic magazine for a new, it was the first running of a new module, undergraduate module, an interdisciplinary module called Serious Tabletop Game Design and Development. And I wanted to take the opportunity to explore the use of emerging technologies such as augmented reality. The module itself is delivered via IATL, so it was delivered over 12 weeks. So the magazine had a double page spread representing each week of the module. So the magazine would, in essence, work alongside Moodle, but in a way replace Moodle, because Moodle can be seen as just a place for dumping files and dumping things. But actually, it's not really a very inspiring place to go to learn new information. So the magazine itself would have a double page spread per week, and that would kind of highlight the key learning objectives from the seminar. But also it have a whole bank of all different types of information. And it was definitely very tutor and student co-created. So each week we'd have a student spotlight. So if any of the students wanted to share their learning or thoughts or ideas, they'd have a section in the magazine. We would film them. We would then use augmented reality to, when you are clicking through your magazine, you could kind of hover your phone over using a certain application, and then that video would then come to life. I guess the main aim was that the module itself was a very creative module, and a lot of the students came from very highly academic subjects.
Yep.
So we wanted the magazine itself to kind of reflect that creative nature, but also, I guess, just to reduce the cognitive load. We would like it to reduce the cognitive load. So rather than having lots more information to read, it was in a very visual form.
Sounds good. I mean, it sounds to me that it sounds like a super animated VLE, you might say. So it's almost like a three-dimensional Moodle, really jumping off the page, literally, perhaps in some instances. What software did you say you used for that? Did you say how did you create that?
So it was laid out in InDesign. Used a lot, all the graphics and photos were created with Photoshop and Illustrator, and then we used an application called Zapper, which was the augmented reality software, which we had as a trial run when we was doing the magazine. Unfortunately, we didn't get permission to purchase the license then. So a lot of the links and things that we used ended up being QR codes.
Yes.
We've since been allocated some money to purchase the software, so we can actually take that further. We are hoping to kind of integrate it more into other modules, using things like Unity to have some 3D animation and, you know, things coming off the page and down.
And what about this? Because there'll be people listening who are very jealous, thinking, "Oh, I wish I had Kim Watts in my department to help me with my stuff," but I haven't got the time and I haven't got the resource. Are there any lessons learned from your super interactive magazine that people might be able to use even in Moodle. Do you have any thoughts on that or any tips?
Well, the magazine itself, it was definitely an extremely ambitious idea because I was exceptionally reliant on the module tutors for the content. So in this instance, I was relying on them to give me extra information. So it was an extra kind of workload. But we did say, you know, it would be nice for people to be able to do this themselves and tutor to this themselves. And actually, you could do a very reduced version in something like PowerPoint, a very, very simple version, or even a Moodle book. There's ways you could do it using Moodle. There definitely are options. It's just me, I'm a very, very visual person. So for me, that's just the natural way that I wanted to go.
Well, it sounds great. And as far as the PGATEL aspect is concerned, is that project finished, if you like? I know that you're going to be presenting at the at Teal Fest, but is there anything else you need to do to finish it off?
No, I mean, that level of the project is finished. However, we are using the magazine on each running of the module. So this year, the pandemic kind of put a stop to things, so we didn't manage to develop much on that. But going forward, the module will be run twice via WMG in the next academic year. And for that, we hope to push the augmented reality, also push the analytical side of things, so we can see how the students are interacting, what they like, and continue getting more feedback. I mean, when we ran it the first time, we get quite a lot of formative feedback throughout the 12 weeks, which really did help to shape the magazine towards the end. And I think we'll take where we left off. We'll be starting off on a really, really strong point going forward.
Yeah, that sounds good. And perhaps we could just broaden the discussion out to think more widely about the other work that you get involved in. This podcast is very much about thinking about the move to online and blended learning and, of course, how we've been coping with the last year and any lessons learned. So could you say anything more about the broader parts of your work and what your experience has been perhaps during this last year? How's the move to online learning been for you, or were your students already online?
Like everyone, my role completely skyrocketed during the pandemic. It was all hands on deck. It was right, we have to take this physical version of something and get it online, times that by 1,000. And yeah, we were very, very busy, as was everybody. So I guess my role was taking exercises that would be run or delivered in class with handouts, with cards, and think, okay, so how is this going to work online? And for that, I used lots of things such as Miro. We've done a whole range of escape rooms where we'd have beforehand a physical room, we'd have a video, we'd have printed materials, and moved that into things like Teams, so it's delivered via Teams. That's worked quite well. Other options are content can be delivered all online, but a lot of tutors found they wanted to kind of segregate that. So it would be maybe a case of me creating some animations to replace them talking all the time, or some videos. And that could be created out of still images with voiceovers and audios, or it could be animations, or it could be recorded footage that we've maybe purchased, or all sorts of different things. So it's definitely a way of thinking out of the box, thinking, okay, what can we do? So it's not just the same.
Well, it sounds like, of course, as you say, you've been understandably busy. What about some of the challenges? And we might talk about some of the benefits as well. But what's been the most difficult for you and maybe the students or your tutors, do you think? Have there been challenges, and have you found any solutions maybe?
Yeah, I think the most challenging thing to start with is that everybody needed the help at the same time. And of course, we wanted to help everybody at the same time. So we tried our best, and we broke down each module. We reached out to all the tutors. We said, right, your module is coming up in X number of weeks. We are here. Can we help you? And between myself and my team, we did manage to kind of get quite a nice process going on. So we just didn't want to feel like anyone was left on their own.
Sorry to interrupt. And that's a real challenge when everybody needs help at that time. You mentioned a team there, just out of interest, because, of course, WMG may not be very well known outside in other departments. So what sort of team have you got? Where do you fit in?
Yeah, so I'm part of Technology Enhanced Learning. And that's with myself, my colleague Ben, who originally has a lot of IT support. He's now our project manager, so he'll lead some of the big projects. We're then actually merging with the education in innovation team. And they are the kind of learning designers. So collaboratively, we do work quite well together.
Yeah, that's interesting. And do you have any, I appreciate a lot of your work is about supporting the staff, although through your work with IATL, you were working more closely with students. But yeah. Do you have any sense of how students have been adapting or coping or getting on with this change?
Yeah, I mean, we did, the student experience team got in touch and asked, you know, what can we do? So we took our physical escape room and moved it into an online environment. And that has actually been taken into various modules as well. And I've actually sat in on that and watched the students and seen how they've interacted. And they've absolutely loved it. They've thrived being able to kind of like get together, something fun, something not too structured, but still learning along the way. Yeah, I think for students feeling isolated on their own, just having some real contact does make a difference to them.
Definitely. And what about perhaps yourself, or from what you've observed in terms of the approach to teaching and learning, any other positives that we might take? And even when things are back to normal, if there is such a thing ever, what might we keep, or what have you seen as a benefit from what we've been doing?
Oh, I think there's huge benefits. I mean, I know I personally have had to think, okay, so I'm limited now. What can I do? There's always a solution to the problem. Whereas if you're not pushed, sometimes you'll do the same thing over and over again. But actually, this whole pandemic is, I feel like it's moved me mountains in terms of my experience and what I can do. And I can speak for a lot of people as well, especially with a lot of the tutors that we work with. They are now using technology they wouldn't even have dreamt of using kind of 18 months ago, because they wouldn't have had a need. But now they've got that need. It's actually opened, their capabilities and what they can do drastically. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I'm just trying to understand your role, because I appreciate that a lot of it is about production and making things. So do you tend to, is that the case? Or do you also have to train staff and show them how to do stuff themselves? Do you get involved in that?
I do on a small kind of count. So I did in the early days, I did a lot of training on, okay, so if people are recording their own Teams meetings, how they would go and edit that, what they could do, how they could top and tail it and integrate it into their presentations. So I've done a few different sessions on training that aspect.
So, yeah, what about any current work or future plans or anything you're developing at the moment? Anything to say about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm really excited to be working on a new mental health productivity pilot, which aims to demonstrate the link between mental health and productivity in the workplace. Now, this is a research project, and my role has been to I've been doing lots of filming, lots of green screen filming, but also lots of animations, lots of H5P activities. So the pilot runs over a period of 12 weeks, looking at sleep and rest. I've been working with an external company called Volute, who's looking after our website. So I've been working quite closely with them. In terms of other developments, we are keen as a team and a department to push things like 3D animation, push the augmented reality, potentially virtual reality. What can we do? We're part of the innovation team, so we need to be innovating constantly.
How long have you been here at the university now then, Kim?
So I've been here just over 2 years. I joined in March 2019.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask is I just wonder that maybe if somebody was starting new, maybe getting into this sort of work, have you got any tips or advice, or is there something you wish you'd known earlier that you would say to them?
Getting to know so many different people. So joining events and meetings and even committees, just so you get to know all the different people and all different roles. You can then your own role then develops hugely, because you get to be involved in so many different things. Just go for it. Just be brave and go for it.
That sounds like a good tip. Be brave and go for it. And yeah, open yourself up to opportunities. And I think just as with this podcast and meeting yourself here, it's always good to meet folks in different departments, and we can learn from each other, can't we? Well, thanks for your time today, Kim.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks then to Rosa and Kim for their contributions to this podcast. If you want to find out more about both projects, then you can see both of these colleagues bringing their projects to life in a recorded presentation from the 2021 Teal Fest. I'll make sure there's a link in the podcast notes, but otherwise look for or search for Warwick Teal Fest Thursday 1 till 2pm. That's Thursday, the May the 13th from the 2021 Teal Fest. And you will see the LDCU open discussion recording featuring these colleagues. For anyone that makes it to the end of these podcasts, I usually like to include a technology fact, but I'm going to include a podcast tip instead. And that is, if you're interested in all things podcasty, then have a listen and watch the recent Teal Fest presentation from Jemima Rathbone. And her session, titled Podcasting, Learn from a Professional, introduced us to her role and work as a producer at Something Else, the UK's biggest independent audio producers. Jemima produces the Out to Lunch podcast, The Kitchen Cabinet and Gardener's Question Time for BBC Radio 4. So it's well worth catching. Lots of great tips and a good insight into the world of professional and commercial broadcasting and audio production. You can see the link again in the notes or look for the Teal Fest Thursday the 13th of May, and that session ran 11 till 12. Well, that's it from me, so thanks for listening.